to the Seder. And while the shliach was busy putting on tefillin with the people, and he was busy getting the women to ben shliach, he came over to him and he said, "Rebbe, I bought you a big present. I bought a bottle of whiskey for every table, and it's on each table. I put it out myself. So you could save some of the wine because we have the mashke." So there's a question like this: how do you handle this balabas? Because if you handle him in a way that you offend him, he walks out with 140 people. Because as angaivas as a grace, that you could think he's going to win the lottery this Friday night, and the halfen zichich vesos. And the question is then, when you have 14 bottles of mashke laying on your seder table, how do you handle that? You know what answer it. So one of you two will answer it.
You know, sometimes, obviously, it's not a scenario that we can punish him in any way, right? There's no warnings. You know, I'm not going to invite you to the banquet. Kinsa shluchim if you do it to me again. Hanslish, you know, he's the ear and you are the guest. But here, we have to know there's a pasuk. Ein eitzav ein tvuna l'neged Hashem. Pasuk means to say that sometimes you have no choice. There's nothing else you can do here. Obviously, you're here presenting the shlichus, you're here presenting Torah, and mashke, believe me, if there would be a heter, sinishto. This is chametz on your table, and you have to do it bedarke naim, bedarke shalem. I would suggest you, every Rosh HaKol, there's another Rosh HaKol that's competing with him. Try to find out who the next Rosh HaKol is and tell him, the Moshe, this is not happening. And they will, and you're going to get rid of the mashke, but you can't keep it. It's chametz.
The Zuckman, that how do we know that the Yamsuf was made of salt water, not mashke? I am very pleased that our next speaker is here with us today. He consented very graciously to share that which I've asked all of you questions during the interviews. And everybody has a different approach. There are different approaches to the way things are done. There are no two that are alike. But if someone we could say is a professional and understands and knows the mentality of people and could visualize what it means conducting a public seder, it's Rav Yosef Jacobson, Rav Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. So I called, met him, and I asked him he should come today and tell you how you introduce Kiddush, how you introduce Halach Manya, the four questions, the four sons. Tell me over there, how do you introduce Shvecha Moscha? You tell them, pour out your wrath on the nations of the world. What are you telling them over here? You know, and people don't understand it. You know, especially when you do it with candles, it looks a little bit like voodoo. You know, you go with this year, there's no candles. But when you do it with candles, you know, you take a couple of people, you give them a candle, you tell them, go to the door and say, God Almighty, Shvecha Moscha L'Goyim Ashaloyah Da'ocha, Ki Ochalas Yaakov, Tishpach Aleim, annihilate them, kill them. How do you explain that to somebody? So we're going to try and hear what Rabbi Yossi Jacobson has to say about it. And I'm sure you'll find some ideas. Next year, if we're still in Golis, this is being taped. So you'll have this tape, and then we'll see, maybe by next year I'll come up with new answers. So I want to introduce to you Rabbi Yossi Jacobson, who will walk you through the Seder. I told him like this, the Seder can't take longer than 45 minutes. That is, we're making Kiddush, drinking the cups, spilling out the good wine, which you have to explain also why we're spilling out the makis, which they don't understand. And then you go and give it to the guy who has a heart attack in the other room because he just drank all your makis. So there's a lot to talk about. Rabbi Jacobson, please.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kotlarski, for the honor and privilege to speak to this group today. I conducted my first public seder. Rabbi Kotlarski summoned me, I think it was Tavshin Nun Vav, 1996, to conduct the seder in Kobe, Japan. And the first night, I recall, an extra 50 Jews showed up. And we got into a fight with the leadership of the shul. They said they did not register, they did not notify us, we have to send them all home. And I had to promise them that Lubavitch is going to pay for the egg matzah. They said there's not enough egg matzah for the extra 50 Jews. And they finally consented. They had an emergency meeting of the board before the Seder. An emergency meeting, what to do with the extra 50 Jews. And I think Merkez Leon Echinuch still has an outstanding balance. So you come up with all different types of situations and scenarios that you got to deal with on the spot. Now, generally, we're going to go through many points of the Seder swiftly. And I want to, before I begin, give a few points of introduction when you lead a Seder. The first thing is, when you get up to lead a Seder, you want to display confidence. You want to know exactly what you're going to do. Plan it. Do not do things off the cuff. I mean, sometimes you should and could do things off the cuff, but generally you should have a strategy, a vision. Try to find out who the audience is, what type of people you're going to have. Remember, if there are children in the Seder, it changes all of the dynamics, especially younger children. What types of Jews? Traditional Jews, very secular Jews, completely secular, assimilated Jews, or more traditional Jews. Probably you'll have a mixture. I mean, I guess everybody depends on the conditions of your place. But as much as possible, try to find out your audience and plan a vision for your Seder. So when you get up there, you should not have to stutter and bulba and procrastinate and crouch. You want to be on top of your game. When people see that a leader, a rabbi, a communicator, a speaker is confident, so they trust him as well. If you get up and you, so what do we do now? people lose their confidence in you. You want to take control. A Seder is very intense. It's very hectic. There's a lot to do. Remember, most of these people did not grow up in an environment where they know what a Seder is and the 15 steps and all of the customs and the halachas and so forth. So you are the captain of a ship and you have to take tight control, control in the sense of knowing what has to happen and leading your audience there. Straight, swift, and it's extremely important to be in a good mood, to be besimcha. In other words, to be happy, to be confident, to be joyous, and to express that to the audience. What's therefore important is to have nuggets. It's not a time for speeches, shiurim, sermons, long presentations. You want to have nuggets. You want to be able to introduce humor. People open up with humor. The famous Gemara, and it's brought in Tanya about the Milsad of Dichas that Rava gave before every Shir, about Chir Abonat. So Rashi says, in Masech the Psachim actually, Liftoyach Libam, it opens their hearts. When people hear humor, first of all, they don't look at you as a stranger. By definition, wearing a yarmulke, a hat, payas, a beard, you seem different. Even if what you say is good and logical and sensible and inspiring, but by their very looks, you come from a different place, from a different planet, so to speak. Humor is the factor that bonds people. They feel that you're human. We laugh about the same things. We cry about the same things. We're connected. So as much as possible, try to insert humor. Now, there's two types of humor. One is natural humor. You know, a cute, funny, humorous remark, which is off the cuff. And then there are, of course, the Kabbalah Midoyed Doyed's Jewish jokes, thousands and thousands of Jewish jokes. They're all about six themes, mothers and marriage and rabbis and lawyers and food and religion and whatever. But that was not a joke. That was the first type of humor, what I just did. But the second type of humor are prepared, premeditated anecdotes and jokes. And I'll tell you the truth, it's not bad to have a stack of them, because this is what grabs people's attention. Remember today also something else. People's attention span today is approximately 12 seconds. Some audiences, 9 seconds. Some people, if you have a few scientists in your crowd, maybe 30 seconds. And therefore, they tune you out. They tune you out. Today is a visual generation. Everybody is on computers. They see things. And listening, audio, is more difficult to be for people. So you really need to be on top of your game. Engaging, inspiring, humorous, funny. Now, everybody is different, and that's fine. Not everybody, like Rabbi Katlar says, everybody does things differently. Ain't they a saying Shabbos? It's supposed to be that way. There are people who are naturally more funny, and people more serious, and people who are more introverted for themselves, and people who are more sociable. And that's fine. Every person has their beauty and their milus in their own right. But a klal for everybody is, you want good material that's catchy and humorous for the people that you can insert at different points of your seder. Another very extreme, important point, and this is for all of our work and for all of your work, is relevance. People are looking for relevance. In other words, how does it apply to my life? You'll probably know that in every single sikha, the Rebbe said the same words every single Shabbos again and again, and that is, Torah is Miloshen Hayra. Torah is Chayim, Hayra, Bachayim. Why did he say it so often? Because that was the foundation of all of his teachings. That you have to make it relevant to people's lives. It's Tov Shnayim Beis, it's 2012. I'm here in Eastern Europe, in Western Europe, in Africa, wherever you'll be, in Asia, wherever you're going to do your Seder. How does this help me? This is 3,300 years ago. How does it apply to my life? When you make things relevant, that's the key to get to penetrate people, to get to their mind, to get to their heart. Make it relevant to their lives, examples of real life. I'm going to give a few examples, but I'm giving you a perspective. And finally, there was once a shliach who told me that he conducted his first public seder many years ago, and before that he read up many haggadahs. You know, there's so many Torahs today on Pesach, between websites and printed haggadahs and everything. And he read up on every one of the 15 steps, Kaddish, Urchatz, Torah, and he had it all prepared, and he had notes, you know, and then he got up to the seder. The first thing that happened is a child spilled 2 bottles of wine on the table. So that was the first crisis. So one family left and got upset. And then another few children started to scream and cry, and then somebody else got upset. And from all of his status, he couldn't say anything. And it was very frustrating for him. You have to remember that Pesach is v'higadat l'bincha. It's about the child sitting at the Seder. It's not about you expressing yourself. And in your case, it's not just the child in years, but it's also the child in knowledge. In other words, the Seder is not here so that you should be able to have a perfect spiritual experience. After the Seder, you'll go with your chaver and fabreng and do a Seder as a kehilchasa with Ali Hidurim and Pitchufkes and Beyurim and Hezberim. You can go through the Rebbe's entire Haggadah, all the 700 pages. Vehigadat alavincha means you're speaking to the people. And the people are the people. And whatever situation and condition happens, that's perfect. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be. It's a time to speak to children. And children are children. And that includes children of all types and grades. Remember that. Don't get frustrated if your model, Seder, is in your mind and it's not the reality. You'll probably know the Sikha, the Rebbe's Sikha, about Truma Tetzaveh, Vayakal Pkudeh, why it's all repeated. Because Truma Tetzaveh is the model Mishkan. And Vayakal Pkudeh is the real Mishkan. And the Shechina dwells in the real Mishkan, not in the model Mishkan. So there's a model Seder that's the perfect, beautiful, inspiring, impeccable Seder. Which is serious and funny and relevant and traditional, Allah milas. But let me tell you, the Seder of reality is a different Seder. But that's the real Seder. That's where the Shechinah is. That's where Hashem is, and that's what you want to be sensitive to and you want to appreciate and celebrate. These are a few words of introduction. So this is how I begin the Seder. Good Yom Tov, everybody. Good evening. Welcome. We're thrilled to have you. You're the audience, okay? I'm just giving one model and then you apply it. Take notes if you have to. We're thrilled to have all of you. I am so happy you made it here. We're going to have an awesome evening together. It's going to be a powerful, inspiring, relevant, meaningful journey. You don't have to use all the adjectives. I'm just giving different adjectives which everybody can... This you shouldn't say over. Rabbi Katlarsi told me that once, years ago, Mekeshlich, you know, Rabbi Chadukov would tell everybody you have to tell thank you. Before you leave a home, you have to go to the balabasta and thank them for the meal. In the old days, when they used to go to the banish house, so there was a bacher, a mufshit. So after the meal, he went over to the balabasta and he said, Rabbi Chaduk have told me to tell you that the food was very good, and thank you very much. Okay, so it's great to have you. We're going to have a beautiful time. Friends, there was a man living in New York who calls up his son, a doctor in Los Angeles. And he says, son, I had enough. Dad, what are you talking about? What did you have enough of? He said, son, I've been married to your mother for 48 years. She's made my life miserable for 48 years. I cannot take it anymore. We're getting divorced. Dad, you're crazy. You're going to destroy our family. You had a great marriage. No, son, you thought I had a great marriage. It was a miserable marriage. Every day was more miserable than the other day. I had enough. I want liberation. I want freedom. Liberty, freedom. We're getting divorced. He says, you already filed the papers? I'm planning to, and I wanted to tell you. He says, Dad, you can't do this. Son, it's a decision. Over. He says, Dad, before you do anything, I got to call our sister. He says, good. I'm not in the mood of talking about this. You call your sister. He calls his sister in San Francisco. She's a famous lawyer. And says, you hear our old man went insane? He says he's getting divorced from mom. She says, I'll take care of him. She calls him up, Dad, you're crazy? What happened? How can you do this? He says, listen, daughter, this is a decision. I'm getting divorced. She says, listen, you don't make another move. I'm getting on a red-eye plane tonight. I'll be in New York at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'll be in your home at 8 o'clock. Promise me you don't make a move till me and my brother are at your home. We're taking a red-eye flight tonight. He says, okay, I promise you I'll wait. He hangs up the phone, turns to his wife, and he says, honey, there's great news. The kids are coming for Passover, and they'll be paying for their own ticket. Excuse me. Now, people will laugh, but you have to know how to say it as well. You should figure out, if you're going to say a joke, you have to know how to say it. And you say, well, look, we're all here together, and you paid for your own ticket, and we're truly thrilled to have everybody. Anecdotes like this lighten up the mood. They're very humorous. Today, unfortunately, divorce is a very rampant issue. So that twist in the joke, what makes people laugh is the twist, the sapcha. Well, that twist is very funny for people because divorce is very common today, and how he's really a plot to get his kids to come to Pesach, which kids don't want to come for Pesach because Pesach is boring. Again, the same modern and the same Manashevitz, Matzah, and Shlivovitz, they're bored of it. But this concept is a derech, a perspective to open it up. The Seder, friends, consists of 15 steps. It's a 15-step program towards freedom, towards liberation. Today in the world is something very well known as the 12-step program. 12-step program for people who are addicted to alcohol and gambling and other things. It's a 12-step program, so it's a very, very popular concept, which means growth. And there are 12 steps. So Lahavdil, you say we have a 15-step program towards liberation. Why do we do a Seder? The Seder we don't just do to commemorate an old ritual. The Seder is an exercise. The Seder is a journey. It's not a memory, it's a journey. Each step allows us to grow in our own experience towards our own freedom. Freedom from what? Everybody has things that hold them down, that enslave them. Fear, insecurity, guilt, shame, resentment, anger. Different experiences of life, challenges. People have chains that hold me down. I cannot be fully me. I cannot fully express myself. I cannot fully live the life that I was supposed to live. And Passover is that night of the year when we're given the gift. There's a special energy in the world that we can tap into. We can do the Seder and not tap into the energy. Just go through the motions robotically. But how... how painful that would be when we know that this energy is in the world and we can embrace it step by step and introduce freedom. What did I try to just do now? When you tell people that everybody has chains holding them down, fears, insecurities, this is a human emotion. You know it from yourself. And by the way, here's the clown. Whenever you want to make things relevant to the audience, you have to make it relevant to yourself. If you make it relevant to yourself, it'll be relevant to them. The oisius may be different. You may use different oisius, but the concept, if you make it relevant to yourself, it will become relevant to them. And here again, that's why the Rebbe would always say that the best hashpa is what? A dugma chaya. In other words, if you personalize it, that's what comes through. So these concepts, then make them real to yourself. Now, of course, this is the foundation of Pesach, according to Chassidus, that it's a personal zman cheresena. The Rebbe would conclude all of his letters to Pesach, to individuals, cheres mikol inyonim hamevalbelin la'avodas Hashem. So if you try to relate the concept, so now they'll suddenly hear a new thing. I'm not just celebrating an event of thousands of years ago. This is an opportunity for me to become a happier person, a healthier person, a more accomplished person. So even their nefesh ha-bahamas, so to speak, relates to this language. And this is your focus in the Seder, to make things brief, concise, relevant, and meaningful to them, inspiring. Okay, now, let's go through, I'm not going to go through every step of the Seder for natural constraints of time, nor will you be able to. You'll have to choose. You're not going to be able to explain every passage of the Haggadah, and probably in the halachic section of Meir Farkash will discuss those who... some people with the Haggadah probably can't do the whole Haggadah, so you'll probably discuss, the main thing is to scream, Pesach, Matzah, Mother, or whatever Rabbi Farkash will go through. But you'll choose your passages. I once wrote up a brief explanation of Hichsidus of the 15 steps, what they mean in a person's psychological life, Kaddish, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rachatz, in our stage towards liberty. If you want, I can give it to you or email it to you if somebody wants it. But I want to here focus on a few major themes and a few issues that are somewhat complicated. Okay, a few major themes. Number one, Yachatz. Yachatz is very early on in the Seder, right after. Karpas, of course, is Yachatz. When it comes to Karpas, it's a strange thing. So let me just say something about Karpas. Karpas is a vegetable. You dip the vegetable in water, and then you eat it. That's the beginning of the Seder. Kadesh Urchatz Karpas. The opening of freedom, the opening towards liberty is always Kadesh. Kadesh means sanctify. Create a space in your life that's holy. Create a few minutes in your life. Create a corner in your life that's holy, that's innocent, that's sacred. In your mind and in your life, that's the space. If everything is static in your life, if there's no place of purity in your life, you can't grow. It's like sitting down with somebody at a Fabrengen, sitting down with a Bachar at a Fabrengen, he's just laughing the whole time. There has to be a space of Kedusha, a place of seriousness where you're open. That's Kaddish. The second thing, if you want to become free Urchatz, you have to wash your hands from dirt. If you're busy stealing, cheating, lying, deceiving, which is what you do with hands, you're not going to go anywhere. If you're living a corrupt life, if you're lying to people, if you're deceiving people, you have to wash your hands. These are the first two steps. Kadesh Urchatz, in order to become a freer person, to become a liberated person. The next step is Karpas. It's a vegetable. You dip it in water. The vegetable grows low. That's why we make Boder Pri Hadam, I'm telling you, not Ha'etz. It grows low. It's right near the earth. So it says in Svarim that it's a metaphor for the body, which is a... Offer min ha'adama, which comes from the earth and is put in the earth. The vegetable is a metaphor for the body, and the first thing we have to do is take the vegetable and dip it in water. Water represents ein mayim el ha'toira, but you'll say in English it represents wisdom. Water represents wisdom. Water represents inspiration. We have to remember that our lives are here in order to achieve something greater with our bodies. We're not just physical creatures. Anecdote. Bar mitzvah boy comes to his mother and says, I want to talk about our yichus at the bar mitzvah. You don't say our yichus, our ancestry, our lineage. Remember, people don't understand Hebrew. Most people don't understand Hebrew. You have to translate things. Don't take these things for granted. Because sometimes you say a good word, but nobody understands what you're talking about because you said Moshe Rabbeinu, and you said in Chumash Vayikra, and you said Zman Chedoseinu, and you mean well, and you say the Mittler Rebbe, and so on, or even the Alter Rebbe, but they don't know. Some audiences do, but most don't. So just translate everything in English and in English that they understand. So he comes to his mother, he wants to talk about his ancestry, his family, where he comes from. Mom says, oh, we come from this rabbi and this rabbi. No, all the way back, we come from Adam and Eve. And they, God created them on the sixth day. Okay, he writes it down like you're writing down, takes notes, comes to his father. His father is a sophisticated graduate from Columbia University. And he asks his father, where do we come from? All the way back. Father says, we come from apes. And where do the apes come from? The apes come from monkeys. And where do the monkeys come from? The monkeys come from other primates, other animals. And where did they all come from? There were millions of years of evolution. It all began with an explosion and bacteria, and then it developed into animals. And after hundreds of millions of years, the first people emerged, and here we are. So he comes back to his mother. He says, Mom, I'm confused. You tell me that we come from Adam and Eve and God, and Dad tells me that we come from apes, monkeys, and bacteria. Who got it right? So Mom says, it's not a contradiction, my son. Your father was talking about his side of the family, and I'm talking about my side of the family. You see, this type of humor, first of all, it's funny. It brings out a beautiful point. There's two ways of looking at a person. You could look at a person that we are essentially animals, just developed or sophisticated. Judaism, of course, looks at a person as a reflection of God, in the image of God. We have an animal within us, but we also have something very, very pure, very sacred. That's why we can demand from ourselves to be idealistic, not to be selfish, to be noble. And that's the first stage. You have to understand that your body belongs, you need to submerge your body in water. Yachatz. We split the matzah. This is a beautiful message, humility. If you want to be a free person, you have to be able to be humble. You have to have a good friend to whom you share your real true self. If you're arrogant, if you could never break yourself, if you could never say I'm sorry, if you could never tell somebody else that you made a mistake and talk about your flaws, you all know from your lives, you could never really grow. Yachatz, it's difficult. Yachatz is difficult, but you have to break. There's a vart, beautiful vart. It's the Tzemach Tzedek says it in Neir HaTorah. I'm saying it in simple English. What's the difference between children and adults? Why do adults keep grudges and children don't keep grudges? Your child tells your mother, Mommy, I hate you. 20 minutes later, he's her best friend again, especially when she gives him ice cream. An adult tells you, I don't like you, and 20 years later, they're still not talking to you. We would think children are less mature than adults. And the answer is, children choose being happy over being right. And adults choose being right over being happy. Adults often, I'll be right, even if I'll be miserable. So we'll keep the fight. Children don't want to be right, they want to be happy, because their egos are not so big. In life, you have to choose. Are you going to be happy, or are you going to be right? You see, this is a message that's relevant to people. You tell a husband, do you know how to say I'm sorry? Do you know how to be accountable? Can you be honest? The story of the Rebbe Maharash, for example. You know the story, right? A person comes in, and he was embarrassed to talk about his avedas. He tells the Rebbe Maharash, you know the story. My friend did up a terrible aveda, and he says what he did. And he's embarrassed to come himself, so he sent me, so I should ask a tikkun for him. So the Rebbe Maharash says, why did you have to come and say that your friend did it and he's embarrassed to come, so he sent you? Your friend could have come and say that you did it and you're embarrassed to come, so you sent him to ask a tikkun for him. So he told the Rebbe Maharash the truth, and the Rebbe Maharash gave him a tikkun. Why did Rebbe Maharash have to do this? He had to show him, well, you're not going to fool me. I know I'm a shakra. You know, sometimes he wanted to take revenge. You lied to me, I'll show you. By a Rebbe, that's not shaykh. The pshat is Rebbe Maharash was telling him the tikkun. If you're not ready to say it was me, you can't fix it. A tikkun is not, you're going to start saying Isis, you'll dump in the mikveh 100 times, you'll be misaking your aveda. The first thing is exposure. The first thing is vidui dvanim. The first thing you have to say is asha chatanu avinu. That's the first thing. That's a concept of vulnerability. Yachatz, you have to be able to be humble in life if you want real growth. If not, you'll remain stuck. But now I want to tell you a very powerful insight. You could say this either by Yachatz or by the Afikoman. I've said this many, many times in public seders, at lectures. It's very moving for people, and it really sums up everything you're doing here. Yachatz, you break the matzah. You break the matzah. The bigger part goes where? It gets hidden away. The smaller part goes in back to the Seder plate, back to the Kaira. Everything in Judaism is significant. Matzah is a metaphor for the Jewish people. This is the bread of poverty that we have taken out of Egypt and it accompanied us throughout our history. Unfortunately, the Jewish people have been split. Part of the Jewish people stayed at the Seder table. Most of the Jewish people left the Seder table. There's 60 million Jews. Some Jews sit at the Seder table a whole year. They're entrenched in Yiddishkeit. They give their children a Jewish Torah education. They go to shul, they daven, they're entrenched in Judaism. Most Jews have left. And the Seder continues. But we know that you cannot finish the Seder until you don't go and search for the other part of the matzah and bring it back to the table. You must search for the hidden matzah and show it that it also has a place waiting for it at the Seder table. And then together we could say, L'shama haba b'Yerushalayim. And you could say, this was the vision and the message and the call of the Rebbe in our generation. You cannot finish your own Seder if you don't go find the Afikoman. And there's Afikomans all over the world. And if you know that there's one piece of the Afikoman somewhere, you can't just sit at your Seder and enjoy yourself and drink your four cups and say, next year in Jerusalem, till you don't go search your Afikoman. And that's why we're here tonight with all of you. Now, of course, whenever you present these ideas, you have to be very careful not to present it in a way that I'm holier than thou. I'm always at the Seder table. And now I came to fetch you and show you the light. You have to say it in a very respectful and sensitive way. And you could say, all of us are lost sometimes. I'm just making that, but when you speak, this is always a principle. When you speak, the moment you present yourself as holier than thou, people get defensive. But this is a very powerful insight. Now, when we come to the four questions. By the way, before the four questions, there's the Kaida. The Kaida, again, this is if you have a more serious crowd, maybe a little bit of a more mystical crowd, there's the beautiful insight of the Rebbe in his Agada about the Kaida. Zroya, Beit, Tamar, Charesis, Karpas, Chazeres. They are the six emotions which every soul possesses. Zroya, a stretched out arm, is Chesed, love, giving. Beitza is the only food that when you put it in water, what happens to it? It doesn't get softer, it gets harder. Most foods get softer. Gvura, strength, discipline, the opposite of chesed. Marer, bitterness is to feel the pain of somebody else, empathy, rachamim. And then you have charoisis on the right, these are fruits that grow tall, and karpas on the left, which are vegetables that grow very low, hadama, eights. One is netzach, which represents a person's ambition, victory, you could win. And one is haidah, which represents humility, surrender. Look what we're doing. You see, this the Rebbe writes this in the Haggadah. I mean, in Oasis of Kabbalah, I'm just trying to explain it into English. And then again, you have Chazeres, which is Marer, which is Yisoid, which is the ability to bond with people. Marer is to feel people, and Yisoid is to bond with people, explaining the Geres HaKadosh Siman Tesov. And then the plate itself is Malchus, which represents selflessness. Selflessness means the idea that you're here to help other people, and that's the plate. And the three matzahs are Chachma Bin Adas, which is conception, conceiving an idea, Bina, which is developing an idea, Das, which is applying an idea, Chachma bin Das. Okay, this is a Shir as in a few Prakam Tanya within the 60 seconds, but I'm giving you a point. Here you have, this is what Chassidus does, every step of the Kaida, when I focus on the Beitza, I'm focusing on trying to liberate my Gvura, and the Mara, and the Charoises, and the Karpas, and the Chazeres. These are ideas to make the ideas relevant to people. Again, I don't know if you'll have the opportunity. Sometimes, at a later point of Yom Tov, you can explain these things. Sometimes there's a people who stay later for the Seder. Also, don't get depressed if right in the middle of the Seder, 90% of the crowd leaves. And even though I just said that we can't finish the Seder until we search for the Afikoman, I don't know if it's the best idea to go running after them and say, you have to stay here till L'shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, till the Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim, we still have a different reality, And it doesn't mean you did a bad job. I'm just telling you, when people sit for 55 minutes and they ate sandwiches of mutter and chazeres and chareises, and you put in kazesim of matzah and they drank four cups of wine, I would also run away if I didn't know better. So don't take it personal. Don't think you did a bad job. It may be that you did do a bad job, but that they left is not an idea that you did a bad job. You shouldn't get so tumble. This is part of the reality. And every person who stays at the Seder is an Olam Mala V'Higadta Talavincha. V'Higadta Talavincha, that's your child, and you celebrate it, and you enjoy it, and you appreciate it. We come to the four questions. As a general introduction to the Seder, it's a very powerful idea. What are the two main ingredients of the Seder? You'll ask everybody, they'll say matzah and wine. We keep on eating matzah, and we keep on drinking wine. Why? So by everybody, it's tradition. Tradition. You eat matzah, you drink wine. But let's make it relevant. This is the power of chassidus. Matzah and wine are the two ingredients to experience inner liberation. First thing is, you have to be humble, as I explained before. You have to be open. When you're humble, you're open. Matzah is not puffy. It's not inflated. It's deflated. It's flat. Matzah represents humility in a person. When you're humble, you're open to learn. You're open to ask. You're open to receive. You can grow. You can learn from your mistakes. You know the famous sicha of the Rebbe, matzah chametz. You know the sicha? Chelek aleph, chametz is mem tzadik. Matzah is mem tzadik. One is hey, one is ches. It's also a beautiful insight to share if it's appropriate. Hey and ches are the two most similar letters. What's the difference? Matzah and chametz are exactly the same thing. The only difference is, hey, you fall down on the bottom and you crawl back in. Chametz, you fall down on the bottom and there's no way to crawl in because of ches is sealed. A humble person learns from his mistakes and he crawls back into the game of life. Everybody falls. What do you do after you fall? Do you come back in? An egotistical person, he can't be accountable. He can't say, I'm sorry. He can't learn. He always blames other people. He remains in Sha'al Tachtis. He remains in a fallen state. Matzah is the first stage. The second thing is yayin, wine. What's wine? Wine represents that inside of everybody there's tremendous intoxicating potential. You sometimes have to press on the grape to get it out. But wine represents, look, you look at a grape, who would know the power that's in a grape? It's a grape. It's a nice, sweet grape. But when you press the grape, what comes out of it? A very, very powerful beverage that nichnas yayin yotzeh soy, that brings out the deepest secrets of a person. This is a metaphor for life. You want to be free? First thing is humble. The second thing is learn from the wine. You have to actualize the tremendous, incredible potential that's in you to bring joy to the world, to bring joy to yourself, and not just joy, but powerful joy, intoxicating joy. Mesameach elokim va'anoshim, again, English, wine which brings joy and reveals many, many depths. So these are the two ingredients of the Seder because they represent two powerful things. The Shalah writes, by the way, also beautiful insight, three matzahs, four cups of wine, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Sara, Rivka, Rachaleya. He goes through the whole system of the first Kaddish. The first cup is Sara, the second cup is Rivka, Rachaleya. Beautiful insight. The first cup is Sara because she's Kaddish. She's the one, the first Jew. She's the first Jew. She brought Kedusha to the world. Rivka is the second cup, which they say on the Haggadah. And the Haggadah is Maschil Begnus. You talk about our history between idol worshippers, and that was Rivka. And then Rachel, it says a person gets sustenance. Beschus Ishtar, Rachel was Akeres Habayis. And Leah is Hallel. Leah was always praising Hashem because she never felt worthy. Rachel always felt worthy. Leah never. So Hallel is Leah. That's the fourth cup. The three matzahs, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And there's an interesting insight according to Chassidus, that for a man to experience liberation, he needs to be less of himself. He has to have a smaller ego. And the women will like this. And for the women to experience liberation, they have to have wine. They have to be more of themselves. They have to bring out themselves. They have to actualize their potential. And as the Fikha told somebody once, the Peretzech, when the Netz, so to send Eisnam and by the Ezra's Noshim. Because they have a lot of influence and impact, so it's important to be sensitive, of course, to the men, but also to the women. But such a vart is a very, very powerful idea, why the four cups correspond to the four women. Here the child asks. It's brought in Svarim. Shoyel comes from the word shoyel, borrows. This is a moment that you can use very powerfully. The child borrows. What does the child borrow? What do you think? What does the child borrow? The child borrows a father. This is the time that a son bonds with a father, a daughter bonds with her father. Not everybody has a father. Some people have had fathers, but the fathers passed away. Some people have living fathers, but they don't have fathers. And some people have been hurt by their parents. And they still crave that wholesomeness, that love, that confidence that a father, that a mother is supposed to give a child. Kana ben shayl. This is the time that Hashem in heaven opens up the energy of fatherhood, where you can borrow for these moments that wholesomeness that a father is supposed to give you. Kana ben shayl. Often there's somebody in the crowd who lost a father, and this is very, very meaningful to them. The Rebbe once said it of Ablengi Yir Aleph Nissen, I think Mem Gimel, Tatech Chola Defreg and Defreg Kashas, that since the Rabbeim said it even when their fathers were on Olam Ha'emes, it means that their fathers came to the Seder. The Rebbe broke down then crying, actually, when he said it. Yir Aleph Nissen, I think Tovshim Mem Gimel, Kana Ben Shoyl Tatech Chola Defreg and the father comes. It's a very powerful idea because unfortunately we live in a generation where there's very many broken families, as you know. And parents are not always there for their children. And this is a very powerful idea that it's a moment of healing. It's a moment when you can create a father for yourself, Kana ben Shoyl. And you go through the four questions. I should tell you, I once wrote up the four questions also in a way that's relevant to people, just like I did the 15 steps, and I can give that to you as well if you want. Now you come to the four children. Hake es shinov. First thing, Keneged Arba Bonim Divrei Torah. I now tell you an insight that everyone said it of Abrengin. Keneged Arba Bonim Divrei Torah. Torah speaks about four children. What does this mean? A few things. Number one, Torah says there's no one child. There's different types of children. That itself is a powerful idea. There's no one child. There's different types of children, and everyone has to be spoken to, and everyone is spoken to, and everybody's spoken to a different way. We have children. Every family has different children. No two children are the same. And each child has a different message, but each child has to be spoken to. You can't ignore any child and say, this child is off limits. So you have 3 points here. Number one, there's not one child, there are four children. Number two, to each child you have to speak, you have to address. And number three, there's a different message that you address for every child. Keneged Arba Bonim Divrei Torah. Chacham Rasha Tam Sheni De'Elishol. Very relevant. You have the kid who's goody-goody, wholesome, nice, always following the rules. Straight A's in school, you know, graduates, college, valedictorian, always nice, never makes trouble. Then you have the Rasha, the rebellious child, the rebellion, always rebelling. You know from yourselves. And then you have the Tam, and then you have the Sheni De'Elishol. The Tam is the person who's, you know, they're innocent. They're tuned in, but they're tuned out. They're both. They're just innocent. They're not really, they're not engaged. They're not even rebelling. And then there's Sheni De'Elishol, somebody who's completely not interested. They say in the name of one of the Gedolei Yisrael, also a beautiful word, it's the four generations of Jews who immigrated from the old country. The four generations. The immigrants themselves is the Tchinas Chacham. The Yidden, all that, everybody has an Eltelzeder with long beards. It's the Chacham. Then the second generation rebelled. This is Russia. The third generation was confused. Tam, the Zayda was from. The Baba lit Shabbos candles. The mother and father were not from. Confused. And then the fourth generation, the Sheni and the Elishol. They didn't see not the Zayda. They didn't see. They didn't see the great grandfather. They don't even know to ask. They're not confused. They don't even know to ask. And Keneged Arba Bonim Dibra Teira speaks to each child. Hakei Eshinov. Important idea. People will translate it. I don't know how they say it in the English. I got it. What does it say on Hakei Eshinov? Probably bluntest teeth. Bluntest teeth. What does this mean? What it means is, the Rebbe once said this very briefly out of Abrengen. What it means is, you know, with teeth we bite. The Russia is very rebellious. Ma avayda azayis lachem. The first thing, Hakei Eshinov. Go beyond his bite. Go beyond his bite. Calm down his sharpness. And then you'll see that behind his sharpness and his rebelliousness, he's really a good person. Hakei Eshinov, don't get so affected by the teeth. It looks like he's biting you, but really behind it is a good boy, a nice boy, a pleasant boy. Everybody has purity in them. And here's the famous word of the Rebbe, Ilu Haya Sham Loi Haya Nigal. Now let me just show you the I don't know if you could say this, and you say the Vilna Gaon has a Pirush on the Haggadah. You know what he says here? You know what he says? He says, Why do you go third person? Why don't you say, so the Vilna Gaon says, you're not allowed to speak to a Rasha. You're not allowed to look at a Rasha. It's your child, tough luck, he's a Rasha. The moment he says, you have to take your chair, turn it around to the other kids, don't talk to them. And what should you tell them? Speak to them and say, let me tell you about your rotten brother. Ilu hayasham lahayanigal. That's what he says, a clear, he's finished on that God I saw it. The Rebbe in the early years, what did the Rebbe type? Why did it say in third person? Because you're not talking about him. Ilu hayasham, if you were there before Matan, you know that? If you were there before Matan Taira. Then, if you decide you don't want Yiddishkeit, that's it, lahayanigal. But today, after Matan Teda, every Jew is holy, every Jew is godly. Today, of course, he would be redeemed. I just, Shinov, go beyond the teeth, blunt the teeth, and you'll see behind it is innocence. A good anecdote for this. There was a zoo that needed, they needed a new beer, and they couldn't get it from Africa. So they asked somebody to dress up like one and behave like a bear in the zoo. So a Jew needed parnasa, so he dressed up like a bear and he went into the zoo and he made all these tricks and he was attracting thousands of people and he really enjoyed the job. All day he would be a bear in the cage in the zoo. One day he jumped and he fell into the next cage. It was the cage of the lion. And the lion starts coming close. The lion was hungry and the Jew is inside the bear skin to last moment. So what do? He says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, to which the lion responds, Baruch Shem Kvayd Malchusei Lailam Vad. Nearby the next cage, there was a wolf. The wolf screams, if both of you won't be quiet right now, we'll all be fired. The point, of course, is that beyond the skin, beyond the hide, beyond the husk, beyond the levushin, Hake Ashinav, you'll see this purity there, this innocence there. Every Jew is sacred, every Jew is holy. So this is about the Arba Bonim of art. I want to share with you an insight on Marer. Because Marer, you want to introduce Marer. And you want to make every step of the Seder exciting. People should feel that if they don't do it, they're going to be missing out on something. That's what you want to do. They will be missing out on something, but you want to make them feel that they'll be missing out on something. I remember I once was doing a Rosh Hashanah in Yom Kippur, and I was by a shliach, a big shul, and he said, I'm here for 25 years, nobody ever bowed down by Kodem. Nobody ever bowed down by Kodem. Let me see if you could make them bow down by Kodem. So I got up and I said, generally Jews believe that we don't bow down to anybody. We don't bow down to anybody. We don't bow down, we don't sell our souls. But there's once a year we bow down to who? To God. And if you bow down to God, then you don't have to bow down to anybody a whole year. If you don't bow down to God, then you'll bow down to your boss, you'll bow down to your mother-in-law, you'll bow down to your husband, they loved it, the women, you'll bow down to your wife. But if you bow down to God, for real, then you won't have to bow down. So I said, whoever this year doesn't want to bow down to anybody, if you want to be able to maintain your comfort, this is the time to bow down. So now we're going to do it. I said, it's a very good exercise to liberate yourself. And they all went down like tatalach. The only problem is they didn't know you have to get up. So they didn't know. So they took it as a kipshut, a kemashmai. They used to say about certain chazanim that they, during koyrim, they used to fabreng a little bit. They used to have a seder. They didn't know what to get up, so I already got up from koyrim. I could have done the illa and musaf and shachas. I was standing there with the shlech and we're looking at everybody is down. Everybody is down. So I said, okay, the bowing is over. Now come back up. I'm telling you the point because in different situations, you have to use different oisias to inspire people to feel it's an opportunity. And that's what I said is an opportunity. It's a mitzvah. It's a way to connect to Hashem. And it's an opportunity for chayrus, for liberation. Marer, what does marer represent? Marer represents the ability to feel the pain of others. It says in the Torah, it's brought in the Rebbe's Haggadah, to feel, to empathize, to be able to look somebody in the eyes and listen to them. To be able not to say, because I'm in a good place, so that's it. Nothing else matters. to be able to be sensitive to the fact that there's pain in the world. And here's an opportunity you could talk about the fact that people have losses and people have negative experiences. And as Jews, we want to bond with those people. We want to be able to look somebody in the eyes and give them an embrace, a hug. And that's the maror, in addition to the matzah and the wine. Koyrech, oh, geschmack. So what the Chassam Sofer I once saw. I'm going to use it, I'm going to say it in Chabad Oisius, but the word is his. There are three types of people, there are three types of experiences in life. Pesach is beef, right? Lamb chops, beef, geschmack. Matzah is bland. Matzah is bitter. There are Jews who have a geschmack in Yiddishkeit. Pesach, matzah, bland. FFBs, for blundered from birth. And then there's murder. What's murder? They're bitter. They're resentful. They're angry. Like some of our graduates. They're angry. They're upset. Murder. Kainasa Hillel. Hillel was the great lover of Jews of his times. What did he do? Hayekairech Pesach Matzo murder. He understood, like we spoke before about the Afikoimon, that we have to be able to sandwich everybody together and eat them. In life also, there's moments in life that are beautiful. Pesach, beef. There's moments in life that are bland. You'll get married, you'll figure it out. Bland, you have to get up every day, it's boring. And then there's moments that are difficult, martyr. And the chiddush, the power of liberation is ayakodach Pesach matzah martyr. That every moment you know you're serving God. And because you're serving God, so every moment has equal value and significance. This is an idea, it's very powerful. You tell people you're not going to eat the sandwich. And today in Golos we don't have the Pesach, but we still have the matzah and the maror, plenty of it. And you're eating it together, you're helping sandwich these experiences in your life. Good story for this. Excellent story. Again, you have to know how to say it. I share this story many times. They say the story of Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech. You know the story? Somebody once informed on them, they put them in a prison cell. You're remembering everything I'm saying, I don't understand, the zitzma cooked it off to take notes. Okay, fine. Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech go in a prison cell, and they're packed. The Halakha Reb Elimelech of Lezhenzev and his brother Reb Zusha of Anapoli. There was a problem. There was no Beis HaKisei there, there was no bathroom, and instead there was a bucket that was used for human needs. Comes morning, Reb Melech is crying. Reb Zusha says, why are you crying? He says, I can't daven. I can't daven now. Pishul Chanarech, there's such an odor. The Rambam now these days in Hilchas Tefillah, there's such an odor. You can't daven here. So Reb Zusha says, no. Reb Melech says, it'll be the first day since my bar mitzvah. I won't be able to daven. The first time in my life. I can't daven. Reb Zusha says, is vas? So you won't. There's a first time for everything. I'm saying it in my own words. Reb Elimelech says, what do you mean, first time for everything? If I don't daven, if I don't connect to my soul, if I don't connect to God, I'm not connecting to the source of reality, I can't live. I'm not living a functional life. I'm living a defected life. So Reb Zusha says, one second. The same God who wants you to pray, the same God says you shouldn't pray when there's a horrible stink, when there's a horrible smell. So by not praying, you're fulfilling God's will. It's also God's will. You'll connect to God by not praying. Wow, he didn't think of that. Instead of crying, he was crying. He starts singing. Two chassidim, a few minutes, they were dancing. The guy who saw two Jews dancing, they all joined the dance. In 5 minutes, he had Purim, some chastere, kazatskis, lebedek. The warden hears people dancing. He comes in, he says, everybody's dancing. The simcha mazal always starts screaming, what's this happiness? So one of the goyim there points to the two Jews. They started it. They instigated it. He says, why are they so happy? He says, I don't know. He says, tell me right now why they're happy. He points to the bucket. So the warden says, why is this bucket making them happy? So the guy says, I don't understand. I don't know. But they started to say that as a result of the bucket, they developed a new type of relationship with God. Before the bucket, they had one type of relationship. But now through the bucket, they have a new type of relationship with God. So they're very happy about it. He says, I'll teach these miserable Jews a lesson. He takes the bucket and he throws it out of the cell. So Reb Zusha tells Reb Melech, yes, kens to daven, and now you can start davening. What's the point? The point is, in life there's Pesach, there's Matzah, there's Maror. A Jew sandwiches them together. Because in every moment there's a relationship. There's a call, there's a meaning, every moment there's a relationship with God. Shmeicha mascha el agoyim ashaloyu de'ucha, as Rabbi Kotlarski said before. By the way, Eliyahu Hanavi, we're reading Eliyahu Hanavi, so in addition to the pshat, you probably know the story of the Baal Shem Tov about Eliyahu Hanavi. I saw it in your booklet. It's a beautiful story. You know the story about Eliyahu Hanavi? You don't know the story? I'll tell you the story. It's a beautiful story. There was a student of the Baal Shem Tov. This is what they say, a student of the Baal Shem Tov, I want to have Gili Eliyahu. The Baal Shem Tov said, Gili Eliyahu, what do you need it for? I want to see Eliyahu Hanavi. He nurged and nurged and nurged. So the Baal Shem Tov said, Erev Pesach, go to this and this town, go to this and this house, at the end of the city near the forest, bring them a wagon of matzah, wine, fish, chicken, vegetables, fruits, and celebrate the first 2 days there. Okay? For Eliyahu Hanavi, he'll leave his family for Pesach. He goes there. He brings the wagon. He knocks on the door. Can I stay with you for Pesach? The woman says, I would love to, but we don't have anything to eat. We're a very poor family. He says, I brought all the food myself. They packed in the food, 9 children, hungry, emaciated, skinny, sleeping on the floor, broken home, broken windows, caved in roof. They had a seder and a Pesach that they never had. They never had so much food. They never saw so much food. The 2 days finished. He had a nice Pesach with them, fine Jews, simple Jews, God-fearing Jews, but not Eliyahu Hanavi. Goes back to the Baal Shem Tov and is very disappointed. He says, Rebbe, why did you tell me I'm going to see Eliyahu Hanavi? There was no Eliyahu Hanavi there. So he says, go back to the house, but this time don't go in, stand by the window and listen. He goes back, he stands by the window. The husband is having a conversation with the wife. He says, Sara, whatever her name was, what do you say about our mazel? This wealthy man gets stuck right before Pesach, mamish in front of our house, and he has a wagon filled with food. What mazel we had. So she says, stop speaking nonsense. It wasn't mazel, it was Eliyahu Hanavi. So he realized that who was Eliyahu Hanavi? Himself. In other words, the Baal Shem Tov was telling him, you want to see Eliyahu Hanavi? This is what you should do. Take a wagon and fill it up with food and go feed 9 hungry children and then look in the mirror and you'll see Eliyahu Hanavi. When you look in the mirror, you can choose to see the devil and you can choose to see Eliyahu Hanavi, and you're the one who makes that decision. And this is the power that every person has. Okay, Shvei Chamascha. This is a difficult one. Shvei Chamascha Agoyim Ashloyd. What's Takip Shat? Psiches Adelis Eliyonum Vasra Agulu. That's our request. The answer is, friends, and this is very, very simple and very, very true and very, very moving. And I'll explain it with a story. A Christian once debated Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz. Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz was a big debater, the Yad HaZvash. And he said, look at the difference of your Torah and the New Testament, the Christian Bible. Look at the difference. In Torah Shemeksav and Chumash and Tanakh, God is a keil, kana, peiked, avin, avis, albonim, hashemish, melchama. He's always punishing and taking revenge and penalizing. It never says in Chumash, God will kiss you and God will embrace you. A few times it mentions love, but mainly kanos, jealousy, envy, punishing, mabuz, daimon, amayit. He says, look at the Christian Bible. God is love, 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 love. Your God is a God of blood. Our God is a God of love. The Gaonis and Emshit says that's the whole problem. You see, by us, we said, God is the one who's going to take revenge. God is the one who's going to punish. God is the one who's going to fight the wars. God is the one who's going to penalize. And what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to be loving people. By you and your Bible, you say, God is love, 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 love. So who has to spill all the blood? You spill all the blood. You ended up murdering millions and millions of Jews in the name of love. We're asking Hashem, Shvei Chamascha El Agoyim Ashal Yadol. We want to dedicate our whole life to peace, to love, to spread goodness and kindness with all people, Jew and Gentile. But we all know that there are bloodthirsty murderers who gun down 4 people in Toulouse and pick up a child by her hair and shoot her in her temple. And we all know there's a madman in Iran who says, I want to make another Holocaust and denies the first Holocaust. And we all know that in a few days there's hundreds of rockets that threaten and want to kill civilians. And we know, it's our responsibility to defend innocent people. So we ask for the day when Shvei Chamascha L'Goyim Ashal Yadol. When you will reveal the purity in the world and you will take care of that which you have to take care of so we can dedicate our life to love and holiness. Similarly, when you pour out the wine, we pour out the wine during the Ten Makkos, and there's a very profound lesson here, and that is the plagues were plagues. We're not of the philosophy of pacifism. Pacifism means you never fight back. People who believe you never fight back are directly or indirectly responsible for the death of innocents. If you see somebody who wants to blow up a child, you are morally responsible to stop him. If you see somebody mugging or raping, and you don't stop it because you say it's all with peace, you are helping the criminal, even if your intentions are beautiful. But we pour out the wine to tell everybody that our joy on the defeat of Egypt is incomplete. Wine is joy. We pour out the wine because it's incomplete joy. Why is it incomplete joy? It's incomplete joy that we still live in a world where people have to drown because they want to exterminate an innocent people. And we hope for the day that the image of God in everybody will be revealed, that there wouldn't have to be such evil in the world, so we don't have to defeat that evil in the world. So we celebrate, and we do what we have to do, but we acknowledge that we're waiting for a day, l'sakin oylem b'malchus shin dalad yud, when the world will be saturated with goodness. I'm going to conclude with a story. I actually wanted to conclude with two stories, but I'm going to conclude with one story. And the second story I have written, also I wrote it up once, so if you want it, I can send it to you. Give me your email. The story that I do want to say is this story. Very, very, it's a story you could say in the beginning of the Seder, in the middle of the Seder, by Shulchan Aruch, or during Yom Tov. I heard this story once. I can't vouch for its accuracy. I don't know how it got to us. This point is emes, and certainly the Musa Haskel is emes. They say that it was in the Warsaw Ghetto. There was an uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto on Pesach. Pesach Tovshin Gimel, 1943. They made an uprising, and the Germans destroyed the whole Warsaw Ghetto. Nachum Zembe was killed. Pesach Tovshin Gimel. There was a boy having a Seder with his father in a bunker in Warsaw. And he asks the four questions. And he finishes the four questions. And when he finishes, he asks his father, "Can I ask a fifth question?" And the father says, "Yeah." And he says, "Manishtana ha'am hazeh mikol ha'amim. Why is this nation different than all the nations of the world? We're persecuted and hunted and targeted and decimated." So the father says, "Let me tell you something about our people. We began before most other nations. Most nations are young. We began before any other nation. Avraham Avinu's days. So our story begins before any other nation, but our story will also end after everybody. And until the story is complete, it's impossible to understand. It's like you're reading a book, and there's thousands of points that are disjointed. And in the middle of the book, you say, 'I don't get it. I don't get the point.' You have to finish the book." So my son, our story began very early, but it didn't end yet. It didn't end. I don't know. Could I ask the sixth question? Yes. Father, next year, will we have a Seder? Will I ask the four questions, and will you give me the answers? The father told him, "Son, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know if next year I will be here. I don't know if next year you will be here on earth to have a Seder. Perhaps you'll ask me the four questions in heaven. So I don't know the answer. But one thing I know, we say in the Haftarah, the Bracha, 'Ki b'shem kotshecha nishbata l'shalayich b'neiri l'olam v'ad.' In your holy name you have made an oath that his flame will never be extinguished for eternity. What I can promise you is that somewhere in the world, there will be a Moshala like you, and there will be a Jewish father like me, and his son will ask him the four questions, and the father will answer him the answers. That's what I can promise you." Moshala perished in the Warsaw Ghetto. His father perished, the whole family perished. and it took 3 years and 6 million Jews perished. Now it's almost 70 years later, 69 years later since the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. But Nazi Germany is gone. It's obsolete. And today around the world, there are hundreds of thousands of Jews sitting around tables, and you'll mention your city, and you'll mention Jerusalem, and you'll mention Moscow, whatever else you want to mention, and Moishalach, and Rochelach, and Saralach, and Yosalach are turning to their father and mother and say, I want to ask you 4 questions. Because the flame has not extinguished, and we are here tonight making sure that that flame shines forever. Thank you very much, and a lot of us love you.